Henry Ranga here again with Dr. Roy Clouser, and now you're going to study time. Time. Time is an ever-rolling stream, bears all her sons away. They fly forgotten as a dream before the break of day.
You know that line from that hymn.
Okay, yes. So what is time?
Well, it's not a what. It's a mode of existence.
Okay.
It's maybe the most basic characteristic of the created world.
Okay.
I think it's real. I don't go along with Augustine and others who have said it's merely subjective. Kant and Augustine are on the same side there. We project time into our experience and we organize it so that there's a succession of events.
Okay.
I don't think that's right. And the New Testament itself says several times that God created time and that God is before time, before the ages of time.
Right.
Some people have tried to poke at that. Well, before time, before means
right,
there is
yeah,
a time.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it just means God's independent of time.
Right.
In Hebrews it says that God has created the ages of time through Christ.
Okay.
And the Jews of Christ's day viewed all of history as divided into ages.
Okay.
So there's the age of the patriarchs, and there's the age of the prophets,
okay.
and there's the age to come, and that's
right.
going to be the age of the Messiah.
Right.
And we're going to throw off the Roman rule, and,
right.
and the Messiah is going to bring peace on earth. And that's why his disciples say to Jesus, is it now you're going to restore the kingdom? Is this when the age is going to be ushered
right.
in? Sometimes that word age is translated world, the world
right.
to come. It says the age to come.
Right.
So they're looking for that, and it enforces that time is real. It reinforces.
Right. Right.
We all have that impression anyway. I think
yeah.
that's something else self-evident to everybody. Time moves on.
Right. It's never rolling.
That's right. and we get older with it and so on. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And also that it can't be reversed. Now I'll give you another line. This is from another poem.
Mm-hmm.
It says, the moving finger writes, and having writ moves on. Nor all your piety nor wit can cancel half a line, nor all your tears wash out a word of it. What's done is done, it can't be undone. That's from the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam.
Wow.
Yeah. But
wow.
Something comes back to me every so often.
Well, I know, and like even for everything there's a reason. There's a time.
There's a time
for every
for everything under the sun.
Under
yeah.
heaven. I mean, this again, you get that concept of time.
Yeah. It's certainly real.
So in some ways, time comes into play in anything we do. The second we're born, we experience time.
Absolutely.
The moment we're gone or we die, now do we then experience a different dimension of time? Now we're in the eternal time. We're not with God. Is there timelessness now? I mean, some people would say the soul eternally exists.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? I'm just saying these are all issues
okay.
of time.
Yeah, they are. There is a line in the Book of Revelation that says, "And time will be no more."
That's right.
And
There's a song, and time will be no more. You know, it goes in that song.
That's in one of the hymns, too, yeah. And in more recent translations, it's rendered, let there be no more delay. And I just don't see how they get that out of it. I don't. It's chronos that's used. There's the word kairos for delay,
right, yeah.
and it's not used. But it doesn't say, though, that if time is abolished, it isn't recreated. So there's a lot of ambiguity around that. And I think instead of biasing it by putting your interpretation in as a translation, just leave it as it is and let it be puzzling, because a lot of things in the Book of Revelation...
Well, you know, and that does really, you know, we can make our theories about our experience. The Bible talks about the next heaven, I mean, the new heavens and new earth, and next existence when we die,
right.
and how time functions differently. So we really, it's hard to make theories about that which we haven't experienced
yet.
So we probably should leave eternal understandings of time to that thing.
And in the meanwhile, we have that passage I referred to in our last session in Revelation that pictures the souls of the dead before the throne of God interceding for the saints on earth. And that assumes there is the same time, that they perceive what's going on on earth and they pray for their... So, and that's the source of the practice of asking saints to pray for you. Okay. Now, that can be corrupted into praying to saints.
Right.
Which we should not be doing. We should not.
But
we can ask them to pray for us.
Right.
So I can ask my mother and father to pray for me still, because they know what's going on here. And they. So.
Right. Now, but some people would disagree with that, too.
Yeah. Well,
whatever. Sure. I mean, I'm just saying. I want to get launched into this concept of ion a moment. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, like people say, I mean, there's different interpretations. I know the Greek, you know the Greek. I mean, but there's different philosophers and religious leaders based upon the philosophies that they were going under. Made some decisions. And what's interesting about this is your philosophy will drive how you interpret the Bible often. So if you have a philosophy of, let's say, eternality that sort of comes out of the perfections of eternality from the Greeks and stuff like that, you can then when you translate the Bible, you know, you can make something be for everlasting, or you can translate that same word, which, you know, is for a time, so that it's for an eon.
Yeah.
So there's different, you know, different things.
Yeah.
So you can start like looking at various things, and different conclusions can come based upon even the philosophic understanding.
Yeah, absolutely, you're absolutely right. And sometimes that works to the detriment of the interpretation, but sometimes not.
Well, I bring that up because I know that in your upcoming book, one possibility that you talk about how the punishment of the wicked is an eon in a sense of it's a time where all knees will eventually bow to the Lord. Now, some people say, well, is that universalism and all of that? But your point is like, no, all heaven and earth, everybody will bow to Christ.
Right.
Okay.
And it seems to me that means believingly, because 1 Corinthians, Paul says, no one can acknowledge Christ as Lord without the Spirit.
Right.
So they all have to be given the Spirit for them to bow the knee and confess that Jesus is Lord to the glory of God the Father. And since that's everyone, that's what I concluded about the punishment. There's a day of judgment, and there's punishment.
Right.
But it's not forever, and there's no place that says it is. It says it's for an age of punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what confuses people is that this expression, ion, ion of ions, when that's used of God, it does mean to everlasting.
Oh, so, ion.
And when it's used in creatures, it means an age. So, yeah.
So there's where the problem
is.
In your theory. Remember, when we we read the Bible, and you know, you might look at what Dr. Clauser is talking about is saying, no, that is not my theory. Because they might say, well, why would you preach the gospel if everybody eventually will bow their knee to God?
In order to bring those to whom God has predestined to be among the believers and work for the coming of his kingdom, to bring them the gospel so that they join with other believers in bringing about God's kingdom.
Okay.
Working for the kingdom.
Right, working for the kingdom and gather them all in. And in the end, the punishment is real. Why would you want anyone to get this punishment?
I don't, but again, the punishment is
said... Of the wicked.
It's said, the expression that's used over and over is that every man will be judged according to his works, whether they be good or evil.
Mm-hmm.
So that cuts across believer and unbeliever. There are believers... who've done wicked things and are going to be punished.
Yeah.
And there are unbelievers who may have led pretty moral lives and they will have little or no punishment.
Right.
But so the judgment is moral. And then everybody's brought to belief.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that people enter God's kingdom without believing. No, every knee bows and every tongue confesses. That means they all had to have been given the gift of the Spirit.
So, now again, so remember, we're in philosophy class here. So so a lot of times people will take philosophy and then they'll hear something like this and go like, well, you know, is this even orthodox? And you know,
it is, but even if it weren't, you're not bound by my conclusions.
Exactly. And this belief is more, actually, it is orthodox. The Orthodox yes. Cappadocian fathers,
that's,
right?
That's right.
They actually believe.
Gregory of Nyssa.
Exactly. So this isn't any new theory about all things.
No.
But as you have
almost
come to
all the early church fathers held this view. It's why there's no item about eternal punishment in the Creed. The Nicene Creed passes over it in silence.
You're talking the Apostles' Creed.
And the Apostles' Creed, too,
okay,
also passes over it. There was no mention of eternal punishment in any creed until after the Council of Constantinople in the year 553.
Okay.
And the reason that the council put it into the creed is that the Emperor of Rome sent them a note and said, I want eternal punishment put in the creed, so they did it.
I think
that's not exactly an exemplary theological method.
Right, right. So here, I mean, the upshot of this, in this theory, we proclaim the gospel, and because we want no one to experience the punishment of God, you know, John 3:16, that no one perishes. But you see, and that's why where people are like, well, perish.
Sure.
You know, what is perish there then in this concept? I mean, you see, again, it's in these theories.
Yes, that's right. Then that God sent Christ into the world not to condemn the world, but that the world might be saved and
right.
rescued. And Christ has earned that redemption for everyone. And in fact, there are other places that say he's redeemed the whole cosmos.
Right.
Yeah.
So those are all confusing things. And this is kind of my take on it. I hope that his theory on this and the Cappadocian Fathers is right, because my heart breaks for anyone not to be close to God.
Yeah.
You know, it does. Because if the other theory that's common is that people are eternally damned and they don't know Christ, my heart breaks for people who don't know Christ, and the stakes are so high. So I don't know where, I mean, we don't know, because it's like knowing time that doesn't happen yet.
No.
I mean, we don't know all of these things, but we know that time is in play.
Yes, and we know that punishment for sin is well worth missing, whether it's eternal or it ends.
Amen to that. So I guess we'll leave it at that.